Your Steve Jones Show podcast audio is loading. Steve Jones Show podcast, sponsored by Kratzer Insurance Agency, Mount Pleasant Mills in Northumberland, and online at KratzerInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Tuesday, everyone. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. 100 years. You don't succeed for 100 years unless you are really, really good. And Sunbury Motors is going to make the next 100 even better. Great people. Well, I tell you, every time I talk with them, you can just tell why they're such a great business. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Nittany Lion basketball coming up tonight as Penn State takes on Michigan here at the Bryce Jordan Center. And for Penn State, this is one of those line in the sand games, I think. I think after you start out on the road with two games, you don't win your opening two games. Illinois and Minnesota know exactly how they feel. Same thing. I mean, Michigan State had a must-win last night, beat Indiana. Well, Michigan State started out with two home games in the conference. They lost their opener to Maryland. And by the way, Maryland is really, really good. I mean, they entered the Big Ten, and they entered the Big Ten cable-ready. I mean, they are set. And it was a hard team to get a read on, by the way, Maryland, because they had five guys transfer out in the offseason, and you just didn't know what the composition of that team was going to be. Well, it turns out Mark Turgeon has a great composition on that team. And I watched the Michigan State game in their first ever Big Ten game, which they won. Well, Michigan State, after losing that opener, had to come back and win last night. They did. I mean, they built an early lead on Indiana and played really, really well. But that was Michigan State playing at home. Penn State played its opening two like Illinois and Minnesota on the road. And like Illinois and Minnesota on the road, Penn State lost its opening two games. Now, there's a couple of things to that. Number one, we know the Rutgers game offensively was just a poor game. There's just no getting around it. Defensively, they played very, very well. You don't give up 50 points and have a team shoot just 16% in the second half unless you're playing really good defense. That gives you a shot to win any game. But they just couldn't score after scoring a lot of points against Wisconsin. But now you get home. Here's the flip side. 9 of the next 15 are at home. And in fact, after they play at Indiana next Tuesday, they'll actually have 8 of their next 12 in the Bryce Jordan Center in the conference. So here's the opportunity to make hay. Michigan's a team that's not scoring a lot right now. And that's the other part. This could be a game where the first team that gets to 60 tonight wins the ballgame. Michigan is led by Zach Ervin and Caris LeVert. They're both good scorers, without question. They're both averaging 14.5 points per game, but they're both, like the rest of the team, hit a slump at this particular time. Penn State needs that slump to continue. Now, they got bailed out by a freshman off the bench, Aubrey Dawkins, who had 20 points against Illinois because they were behind and looked like they were going to lose that game, too. They come in tonight with an 8-6 record. But the game's about Penn State tonight. It's about DJ Newbill getting back to being DJ Newbill. It's about Penn State creating some offense inside. It's about Penn State playing defense. And they have to be able to put this behind them and get going because you're supposed to hold serve at home and then break serve on the road. Well, they didn't break serve on the road. And let's face it, Rutgers was a golden opportunity to break serve. It's the first game this year that Penn State's lost when the game has been decided by 5 points or less. They're now 6-1 in those games. And tonight they've got Michigan here at the BJC. So that's the big one for Penn State coming up tonight. And then they get their first off weekend of the season before they go to Indiana next Tuesday night. So I will watch the national championship game in Bloomington at Coach's Sports Bar in the hotel. Yes. That's where we will watch said national championship game on Monday night. That's after we get off the plane. We have to fly out there first. So that's what's coming up tonight. So this is a line in the sand game for Penn State. You can ill afford to start 0-3 in this conference, especially when you've got a home game. You've got a team that has been up and down offensively. For the most part, you've been up offensively, but you're coming off your biggest down game of the season offensively. Your biggest down game of the season. Even when they lost to Charlotte and they lost to Wisconsin. They put up points. And they put up points in both games. But they didn't put up any points the other night, only 46 in the loss at Rutgers. So you have to put that behind you and just go play ball. It's about Penn State tonight. It's not about Michigan and what Michigan to Michigan does this, they do that. You know what? After it gets to a certain point, when you're the underdog, you do concentrate a lot on what the other guy does. Well, Penn State's no longer the underdog of this thing. Penn State's a good enough team to compete and beat anybody on any given night. That's how far Patrick Chambers has brought the talent level back in this program. So tonight they have Michigan at the Jordan Center at 7 o'clock this evening. Meanwhile, Jesse James announced yesterday that he has decided to opt for the NFL draft. He had three really good years here at Penn State. He was the initial recruiter on him was Tom Bradley. He got him in here, and he had himself a good Penn State career. In the end, do you look at him and say, you know, would it really help for him to be back another year? You know, would it help him? Yeah, probably it would. Okay, but at the same time, do I think he's going to, you know, that he'll be a middle round draft pick? Yeah, I do. He will be drafted. I think he has all the tools to be a really good NFL tight end. He has to be a little bit better blocker. There's no question about that. Has to be a little bit better blocker. But as a receiving tight end, occasionally fights the ball just a little bit. Every once in a while, body catches. But for the most part, do I think he's an NFL level tight end? Yes, I do. No getting around it. He is an NFL level tight end. And I think that's and you have to remember too, there's more to these decisions than, if he stays another year, what happens, does he increase his stock and so forth. A lot of times you have to know who the individuals are, and you also have to understand what their family backgrounds are a little bit to get a feel for it. And sometimes, they look around and say, look, I think if I do this now, I think I can make the league. And if I do, then it's, and then the door opens for me to make some money and get my life rolling and maybe help some other people out too. I mean, and that's the part that's left out in this. But do I think he's NFL ready? Yes. Now, what does that do for Penn State and the domino? Well, number one, I hope Jesse James has a long NFL career. I think he has all the tools to have a 10-year NFL career. I really do. I also think that Deion Barnes, for example, has all the tools to have a 10-year NFL career. And Donovan Smith is going to go to the Senior Bowl. That's really good for him. He needed that. That invitation was a big help for him. He needed that to get to that game, because that's where the NFL scouts are going to be. And Miles Diefenbach got the Shrine Bowl, which is also great for him to get out there with some sort of evaluation. Same thing during the course of the week. Now, the Senior Bowl is the one to be in because that's coached by NFL people, and that really is where you see the swarm of scouts. That's where it happens in Mobile. But the Shrine Bowl will be great for Diefenbach, and it also tells you that it was just an ankle injury. As I told you the Monday after the game, someone had called the show and asked, how badly hurt was Diefenbach? And I said, look, he just hurt his ankle, because I talked to Miles in the hotel. I was on the same floor with him, and it turned out that I was exiting my room, and he was coming up down the hallway into his room, and he was walking fine, and he told me what happened. And so that's good. So that will give him an opportunity, because he needs that opportunity right now. He really does. He only played a few games this year. And with him only playing a few games this year, this evaluation is going to help him, because he's a hard worker. He's a mobile offensive lineman. He brings some things to the table, I think, that people will take a long, hard look at. Again, Jesse James is going to be, I think, a really good NFL tight end. I think he's going to have himself a long career there. And Donovan Smith's going to have to work at it. He's going to have to work at it. He has certainly some measurables that are good, but he's going to have to work at it to really put himself in a position to be drafted in this whole thing. That's why his postseason experience is going to be invaluable for him. For people who get hard and critical on kids for decisions they make, don't do that. right? I mean, I can't advise you, you know, how to have the opinions in your life, but don't get hard on kids, all right? They're 21 years old. They spent 3 years in college. You don't know how they feel about college. You don't know how they feel about, you know, about their family situation. You know, there's so many factors you don't know about, and you don't know what kind of advice they've received. What kind of advice did John Donovan give? What kind of advice did he get from the NFL evaluation group? You don't know any of these things that they know. And then in the end, as a 21-year-old, they have to make their decision, or in Deion Barnes' case, a 22-year-old, make that kind of decision. Deion Barnes already has his degree. Donovan Smith already has his degree. I believe Jesse James is on track to get his degree early in this thing. But it's interesting when a player opts to go to the NFL draft. And look, and sometimes it's obvious. For example, you're sitting there, you're saying to yourself, by January 15th, do you expect to see the name of Jameis Winston in the NFL draft pool? Of course you do. Do I think he's ready to go? Yes, I think he has a lot of NFL measurables that they're going to love. Well, Deion Barnes is going to have some measurables that they're going to really like. Jesse James is going to have a lot of measurables that they're really going to like. They're going to love his strength. They're going to love his 40-yard dash time. They're going to love his size. I mean, there are a lot of things that they're going to really like about him entering the NFL draft. But I always get amazed when I hear people get critical. You know, they get very critical and also personal in some of the criticism. It's a 21-year-old kid. He's not a, you know, he's trying to live out a dream here. If this is the avenue he thinks he wants to live his dream out, great. Now, for Penn State moving forward, what does it mean? All right, let's take, for example, the left tackle spot. All right, the left tackle spot. My guess is that Andrew Nelson's going to get a long look at being flipped over there, and then maybe a guy like Paris Palmer is going to get a long look at being the right tackle. Brendan Mann, of course, has an opportunity with a winter program to strengthen himself and get better. Brian Gaia, same story. Ange Mangiero, so forth. Wendy Laurent. And then we'll see how some of the younger offensive linemen develop in the spring. Defensive end. You lose C.J. Alani, and you also lose Brad Barnes. And, of course, now Deion Barnes. You have Carl Nassib, who has a motor that he's ready to play a lot more plays than he's been playing. And a kid, Torrence Brown, that I think you as fans are going to love watching Torrence Brown play. I think he has a chance to be really, really good. Tight end? I think everyone has forgotten that Adam Brenneman's coming back. So the Penn State tight end situation next year will be Adam Brenneman, Kyle Carter, Brent Wilkerson, and Mike Gesicki. That's not bad. Penn State's still going to be in great shape at tight end. Now, you lose that blocking component as to what James brings, but Carter became a better blocking tight end. Also, I think that Brent Wilkerson's a really good blocking tight end. And Brenneman improved himself in that area. Now, Gesicki still has to work on that part because Gesicki, like Brenneman, played nothing but wide receiver when he was in high school, and then moving in and becoming a blocker is something that, and putting his hand in the dirt. He had never put his hand in the dirt until he got to college. Same thing with Brenneman. And so there's that adjustment. But yeah, those are the four tight ends. Brenneman, Wilkerson, Carter, and Gesicki moving forward. Penn State has plenty of depth at that spot, and they're going to be just fine. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Penn State basketball tonight at 7. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915. Sunbury Motor Company has over 300 new Fords and over 100 new Hyundais that must be sold now. Get savings up to $11,000 during the January inventory liquidation event at Sunbury Motor Company. Liquidation means vehicles need to fly off the lot as quickly as possible, and Sunbury Motors will do what it takes to earn your business now. See all of the great deals on new Fords and Hyundais now, because because time is of the essence, and if you wait too long, the new Ford or Hyundai you've had your eyes on will be in someone else's driveway. At Sunbury Motor Company, they never pressure you into buying a vehicle you don't want or that's out of your price range. They want to make sure you're getting the best possible deal with the best possible service before, during, and after the sale. This is the time to buy that new Ford or Hyundai, and this is the place. Stop at Sunbury Motor Company now while the selection's at its best. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK on this Tuesday. Penn State basketball tonight as the Nittany Lions take on Michigan this evening. It's a Big Ten Network game coming up tonight, by the way. And, of course, we have other programming tonight here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us. I am in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Happy 100th. As Kevin said yesterday, it's going to be interesting to see what they do for their celebration. We would love to be there and be a part of it. It'll be fun. All right. We talked a little bit about Jesse James opting for the NFL draft. He's the third Nittany Lion to opt for the NFL draft. And I think with his measurables at 6'7", 272 pounds, he'll be able to crank out probably at least 30 reps at 225 pounds, and he's probably going to run a 4.640. Those are measurables that the NFL is going to drool over, and I think he has an opportunity at a long NFL career. I think he'll be a good NFL tight end. Deion Barnes will have some good measurables as well when he gets out there, and Deion already has his degree. And then Donovan Smith, of course, has opted as well. He had 1 year of eligibility remaining. He was the first guy to opt out. Being critical of players opting for the NFL draft, that's their choice, their lifestyle, their opinion, their, you know, they have to make decisions in their life, right? And I always laugh when I hear people get so critical of young people making decisions like this because you don't know all the factors and what they've been told and what's been talked about, what their family situation is, anything like that. So just, you know. Like I always tell everybody, it's okay. Just let it breathe. Penn State next year at tight end has Adam Brenneman back. Mike Gesicki, Kyle Carter, Brent Wilkerson. State's going to be fine moving forward. All young players, too. With the exception, obviously, Carter will be the oldest player of the group. Right, Torrence Brown's going to get a chance to play next year. Now you're going to get a little more, you know, need a little more defensive end depth now. As Penn State had a lot of defensive end depth last year. But that's okay. Right, they're going to be fine there. And I talked about Nelson, and you've got Paris Palmer and a couple of other guys in the tackle spot. Some of the other guys getting older, and you know, just let it breathe. It's going to be fine. James Franklin's building this program the way he needs to. You know, takes a little. It's going to take time based on the starting point, just like it's taken Patrick Chambers time based on his starting point. I know patience is not a virtue. Everyone wants to have it done now. They want to be out there in Arlington watching their team play for the national championship. Got it. You want to say you want to be in Indianapolis in April watching your team play in the Final Four. Got it. Don't we all? Don't you think I want to broadcast the national championship? Don't you think I want to broadcast the Final Four? Of course. But you also have to understand starting points and process as time goes. I've watched Patrick Chambers fight his way through the process to build a team with some depth. Now, this is an important game for them tonight, no question. And I'm watching James Franklin go through the process and try and build what he's doing. All right. So when you look at Penn State, they're going to be fine across the board. Next year is going to be a year where, again, they're going to have to fight through some things, but they've got something building in the right direction. Steelers. Well, they went from an 8-8 team to a team that won 11 games this year. But then, without Le'Veon Bell, they lost Saturday night to the Baltimore Ravens. We bring in Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com. Dave, Happy New Year. Welcome back. Sorry we're not talking about a Steeler win. When you look at the tape and you saw the game live, what did you think? What did we see on Saturday night?
What I saw was an offensive line that got manhandled by a fantastic Ravens defensive line, most notably Brandon Williams in the middle of that thing. There's not enough talk about that young fella. Very quick, violent hands, nice explosion, low leverage. Combine him with Haloti Ngata, Chris Canty in there, and of course there are other guys outside and Suggs and Doomerville. And what a great pass rush they have, and they were good against the run as well too. And when the Steelers were without Le'Veon Bell for that game, there was no way that you could expect Tate and Josh Harris and Dre Archer even combined to come close to what Le'Veon Bell can give you. And I'm not really specifically talking about the running game because, let's face it, even if Bell had played in this game and was 100% healthy, odds are he wasn't going to find a lot of running room inside the tackles. Where they missed him the most was probably out of the backfield as a pass catcher.
Yes.
And, even though Roethlisberger completed a high percentage of his passes and threw for 300 yards, I think it was like the third most amount of passing yards the Ravens allowed all season. When you get down deep, it's all good and well to drive between the 20s. It's what you do inside the 20s that matter. And when you come away with 9 points like they did on three drives in that first half, that's just not going to cut it.
One thing about Bell is that you don't have to sub package. So in other words, Todd Haley does not have to put in a guy when he thinks that, hey, look, they may bring some people. I got to keep somebody in the backfield to pick it up. You don't have to sub-package to put him in as a receiver. So on second and third down, especially third and long, second and long, you don't know what the Steelers are going to do because the Steelers don't have to sub-package with Bell. How difficult was it for Haley to call a game, in your opinion, because suddenly he had to sub-package and took the mystery away as to what they were doing back there?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a good point. And, you see these teams with these move tight ends,
right,
that are able to dictate to defenses whether or not they want to go large or go small, depending on what the defense rolls out against them. It's all about matchups in the NFL, right? You look at what's across from you, see where they're lined up, see the personnel package that they have on the field, and how great is it to have your own personnel on the field be able to be multiple. And that was a key word that we heard quite a bit, I think, during the offseason, heading into the season, out of Todd Haley, about how wanting to be as multiple as possible. And when you don't have Bell in the lineup, you're right. You really lose the option of taking a guy and lining him up, taking your running back and lining him up as a threat as a receiver. And on the flip side, if a team wants to only put, six or seven guys in the box, well, then you have Bell back there that can run and do good things against that, and especially out of the backfield as a pass catcher. So, although people will point to the rushing yards as being the difference, right, that's not where they really missed them the most. It was, as you said, really the ability to be multiple and not be as predictable with the personnel that they did roll out there in that game.
Right. No question about that. The other part, this is a small point, but Tucker as a long-distance scoring weapon and as a kickoff guy, what does it mean when you have one of those guys? Because obviously from 45 yards in, squeeze him's fine, but you get him outside of 45 and you put a huge check mark next to Tucker, he'll out-kick him. You name what day it is, and he'll out-kick him from 45 yards out and score. What does that kind of weapon mean in a game like this in the postseason?
It's absolutely fantastic, and let's not forget about that punter there, Sam Cook, Cook as well too. That guy is absolutely tremendous, and people will talk about the way Tucker puts the points on the board from long range and very rarely misses. Sam Cook, will pin you back in a heartbeat as well too. When you look at the Steelers' drives, starting field position in the game, they started at what, the 20, the 40, the 14, the 18, the 20, the 21. They had one at 45 thanks to the turnover, but the final three possessions, 20-yard line, 20-yard line, and then, of course, the final one really insignificant, the 31-yard line. So, it definitely helps in special teams to have a guy like Tucker that basically, if you create one explosive play of 20 yards or more on offense, you're probably pretty close to being in field goal range at that point. And then at that time, and we saw the Ravens even do this in the game the other night. What was it, a third and one? They took a shot deep and to Steve Smith, and he almost got both feet in bounds for a touchdown. How many teams will do that, you know, that far out? Because a lot of them don't know that they've got an automatic three from that far out in that part of the field.
How disappointed were you that when the Steelers got to 20-15, that the Ravens scored the next 10 points? I mean, obviously the Ravens have to be thrilled with how they responded. How do you feel how the Steelers responded, especially on defense?
Well, yeah, you know, look, we knew coming into this season that the Achilles heel of this team was probably going to be their defense. We knew that the offense could put up points at any given time. The only problem was they were inconsistent in that area. But, when you look at the fact that, you know, we already mentioned their punter, Sam Cook, he only punted one time in that game.
Right.
You stole the possession with the fumble. He punted twice. The second one got blocked. Forgot about that one late. But, most definitely, it was disheartening to get points on the board, to get close, only to give up a long field and either a three or a seven, you know, not long after that. So the defense really, really had no answer to them. I had a feeling Joe Flacco would take some shots deep in the game, and while, you know, he wasn't, overly great with it, he did it. He was able to connect on a few. When you throw in the penalty on Mike Mitchell on top of that, that's basically another explosive play there. So there was just so many things that the Steelers didn't do right in this game. When you throw in the hidden yardage of those eight penalties for over 100 yards on top of it, and the team not scoring, you know, putting up three field goals on three of those drives, you get what you had happen at Heinz Field Saturday night.
Obviously, Troy Polamalu is in an interesting spot, and I think James Harrison played with Ernie Stotner. So what do you think going forward will be the status of those two players? Because I know the Steelers would love to see Polamalu retire as a Steeler. What's your gut telling you about those two guys moving forward?
Yeah, my gut tells me that that might have been it for Polamalu. He's got scheduled to make around $6 million base salary in 2015. The Steelers will actually save, you know, about $3 million plus in salary cap if he just walks away and retires. As remember, we've got Shamarco Thomas, presumably the guy that's been groomed the last couple of years, although he didn't play a single snap on defense in 2014, to take his place. Father Time's undefeated, and to no fault of Polamalu's, you know, own, how many seasons can they continue to go forward with him missing, you know, three, four, or five games a season, especially with the price tag that he has on him? So it wouldn't be shocking to learn, you know, in the next, 60, 90 days, that Polamalu is going to walk away. I would think that the Steelers would want to know, and they might be prodding him to do it as well, too. You know, they might say, look, we need you to retire. If not, we're going to have to cut you. I don't think anybody has to worry about Polamalu ending his career in another uniform. I think if it doesn't work out this offseason, then that's going to be it. As far as Harrison, once again, this is a guy that's going to be 37, and once he got himself off of the couch, he played well. Once again, Father Time will be ready for that bull rush in 2015 if he does come back. And if James does decide he wants to play one more year, one would think that he's not going to be willing to do it for a minimum veteran salary, meaning he's probably going to want $3.5 million a season. And I'm not sure the Steelers are ready to go in that direction. So both those guys, in addition to Brett Kiesel, probably played his last snap with the Steelers, and Ike Taylor, who is not under contract for 2015. Mm-hmm. Might be done as well.
Dave, how much the Steelers in the offseason invested a lot of money in Mike Mitchell in shoring up the secondary, and his play again on Saturday was subpar to say the least. How much does that signing and how much does his play set them back in what they want to do defensively in the future?
He said after the game that he played all season with a torn groin, and that, you know, he's going to have to probably have surgery on that here over the course of the next week or two. We'll see what Mike Tomlin has to say about that, in his press conference on Tuesday there. Look, you invest a lot of money. I mean, that was your primary guy that you signed right at the open of free agency there, hoping that he was going to be the guy to replace Ryan Clark, and that just didn't happen. You know, very few splash plays made by Mitchell. Really, kind of irritated a lot of the fan base, maybe with his attitude with the media this year. He certainly isn't going to win any of those media awards anytime soon. But, you know, when you look at technically, you only, you know, to turn him loose and not pay him that $2 million roster bonus that he's due in March, while you're really not going to save any money. I think $1.15 million, if you cut him in March prior to paying him that bonus there. And when you consider that Polamalu could walk away, you have no experience there at the safety position, you almost have to bring him back in 2015, in my opinion. So let's just hope that 1 year in that defense, he learned a lot. Hope he gets that groin repaired, and just hope they get better play out on him next season. If they don't, well, then they'll be in a lot better position to cut him loose after their 2015 season.
And to quote the great Dennis Miller, there's no such thing as a mild groin injury. he actually said that on Monday Night Football once. One final question. This was an 8-8 football team a year ago on the outside looking in. The conversation we're having now, 365 days later, how do you feel about the Steelers 365 days later compared to January 5th, 2014?
Well, here's the good news. They were able to get a lot of those young guys some work on defense this year. Most of the offense should be back. Brown, Bryant, Wheaton. I mean, Bryant, we saw some good progress from him, and especially in the late quarter, last quarter of the season there. The offense, I think is going to be fine. The big question is going to be on defense here. This team really is going to have a lot tougher schedule as well, too. Going to have to make some trips out to the West Coast in 2015 as well, too. And I believe the Patriots are going to be on the schedule along with, I believe, the Colts as well, too.
Yes,
so
they are.
It's not going to be easy sledding there for sure. If I had to predict right now what the record would be, and that's dangerous to do it this quick, I'll throw out 10-6 again. That's my old standby every year is 10-6. And I think this team really overachieved by one game this year. The defense, if it gets fixed, I think it all depends on that, Steve, to be honest with you, whether or not this defense can come together and play better than they did the last several seasons.
Dave, always an absolute pleasure. We look forward to talking to you often in the offseason.
Steve, like I told him, anytime you need me, you just call me. And I appreciate you having me on all season. You're fantastic. You ask great questions as well, too. It's been my pleasure.
All right, Dave Bryan. Thanks so much, Dave. It's very kind of you to say. Dave Bryan, SteelerDepot.com. He has been a go-to guest and is going to continue to be a go-to guest. The reason is I love the fact that he watches the game live like everybody else. Then he'll watch the tape, usually the TV tape, just to get a feel. Then he'll watch the All 22, which is that sideline, that end zone look, the All 22, and just to get a feel as to exactly what's going on. I really like the fact that he puts that kind of time in, and it shows up in the conversations, which I think gives you a little different perspective than some of the other guests that we could possibly have on to talk about the team. Now, as I'm saying, for example, we've had Ed Bouchette on before. Ed Bouchette is one of the best writers going. Believe me, the perspective he brings is invaluable. But Dave's perspective is also invaluable because of what he sees on the tapes. The Steelers were a good football team this year, as were the Philadelphia Eagles. If they expand the playoffs to 15... if they expand the playoffs by one more team in 2015, which I think everyone thinks they're going to do, the Eagles actually would have made it this year. The Steelers will get a tougher schedule next year, in part because they won the division this year. They were the division champions, which means they do have to play New England, they do have to play Indianapolis, and they do have to play Denver. They have to play the other first-place teams. That's how the NFL does it. You have to play the other teams that finished in your spot in your conference. That's why they have to play Denver, New England, and Indianapolis next year. But with Roethlisberger, Bell, Brown, hopefully an improving defense, they themselves will be in a spot that will be a major threat next year. The Eagles are going to get a second place schedule out of it next year. And that's going to be a little bit easier for them to navigate, I think, than obviously what the Cowboys have. And it's going to be interesting to see what Chip does, especially with Nick Foles moving forward and how he wants to handle, because Chip is now in charge of personnel with the Eagles. The Redskins, they've got a long way to go in all of this, and it really starts again with RG3. What do you do at that pivotal spot? That is the spot where if you have elite, you have a chance. If you have pedestrian, you don't. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. In the next hour, we'll open the phone lines at 1-800-795-9565 on News Radio 1070 WKOK.